In this episode of the Zista podcast, we're going to go deeper into areas like AR, VR, and MR. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Zista podcast, where we invite industry leaders and academicians to answer questions that students have within a particular area. Today, we're focusing on augmented reality, virtual reality, and mixed reality. And joining us is Satyapriyan S., the co-founder from Madras Mindworks. Satya has studied at Sriram Engineering College, IIM Trichy, worked with fantastic companies like the Godrej Group, has also been a visiting faculty member at BITS Pilani before going on to found Madras Mindworks. Let's go straight into this session. Welcome to the podcast, Satya. We're delighted to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm glad that I'm here today.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you, now, you co-founded Madras Mindworks, right? And Madras Mindworks creates AR, VR, and MR, so augmented reality, virtual reality, and mixed reality-based solutions for really cool clients like Godrej, Samsung, Mahindra & Mahindra, Hyundai, L&T, just to name a few.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, you know, how is it that Madras Mindworks actually deploys these AR, VR, and MR solutions for its clients? And how are you seeing, you know, the application of some of these technologies really helping your clients?
Yeah. So when we started getting into AR, VR, including us, we thought it was a gaming technology. As it is a gaming technology, no doubt about that. It is an advancement in the gaming technology. But entertainment is still entertainment. Most of our life, we spend working in the work environments, right? So I think if we can add entertainment to real life, workplaces, then it makes a lot of sense. So we being teenagers, we have worked in the shop floor quite a bit. So we thought, okay, we'll try this out. But then I think we started to give a lot of ideas to the management. Some people started liking it. They gave a shot. Like we started there. But as we go, what happens is there is seriousness into the business. All the businesses either chase the top line or the bottom line. There are only two use cases that you can look at.
No. Right?
So, in fact, VR, AR can help in both these areas, right? It can help people improve the top line by marketing use cases. We've done a couple of use cases with automobile companies to launch their new products in events in an innovative way, where they had a lot of footfall into their stalls using these innovative technologies. And the bottom line increase is by adding a lot of experiential learning components, where they found it very difficult to kind of train people on complex scenarios and some cases which are very hazardous to give them a live training.
Right.
We've seen some success in that. I think this is going to be a general purpose technology which is going to have applications across.
So it would be fair to say that the applicability of this technology will not just be limited to, say, just one domain or one industry vertical. In fact, it will have a all-pervasive impact, you know, impacting multiple industries and multiple use cases. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, perfect. In fact, I'll give you a little old-school example of this.
Sure.
See, people thought usage of motors is in the field of, only one field. Maybe they thought it is used for locomotives, right? Motors are just, it converts electrical energy to mechanical, right? We give electricity and it runs, right?
Right.
So, but if you see today motors, without motors, there's you find it in a car, you can find it in a grinder, a mixie in a kitchen, right? So it has so much of use case. It's a general purpose technology, right? So AR, VR is going to be one of those in the future general purpose technologies, which may have impact in all the fields.
That's really nice to hear. And very clearly then, you know, AR, VR, and MR will really have a bright future as we move forward.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, may I ask you to make a slightly fundamental differentiation? What is the difference between AR, VR, and MR?
It's easier shown than done, but okay. but okay, we will try it, right? So, for example, today, most of our worlds, we have two different worlds. Today, we have a physical world and we have a digital world.
Right.
we do, there's no world called that phygital world doesn't exist today. It exists for a very momentous time where we kind of start interacting with the digital screens. That's where the phygital part comes in.
Sure.
Right. So with this in mind, if you start thinking, if you bring digital objects to the physical world, it's called augmented reality. For example, you are in your room, right? You want to bring someone. If you want to visualize, you are sitting in front of Ratan Tata today, who is no more, right? So if you want to see Ratan Tata in front of you, that's augmented reality. But of course, you may need a screen to visualize him. But the perception will be such that you have seen him physically, just sitting next to you or opposite you. That's AR, right? So we can attempt VR. VR is a blindfolded experience where you teleport yourself from one place to another place. It's a 360-degree experience. It kind of blinds you from the current world and takes you to a new world, right? That's VR. And MR is a combination of both, where you can also blindfold yourself. You can also see people, virtual objects or virtual things in your real world. And also you can teleport these whole things to a different world parallelly. I think it's a combination that we call. There's another term which I'm extending. It's called extended reality. If you add a sense of smell or taste or touch to all these experiences, we call it extended reality. So in fact, we are trying to, the funda is simple. Why are we doing all this? Is to kind of, today all our senses are activated only through eyes and ears, right? That too in a separated world, right? Today we interact with screens. Screens are quite flat, but we live in a 3D space, right? So we're trying to bridge that gap, right? That little gap, and also add a little more power to your senses, which is your touch, smell, and the taste.
Fantastic, fantastic. So then extended reality, I think we'll have a lot more applications, coming through with that. And, you know, in my mind, I'm already running through a few examples where you can really have a true application of this technology. Fashion, beauty, e-commerce. Yeah. I think if you look at just these three domains, I think you will have a lot of applicability for technologies like that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. When you were talking about transporting yourself to another world, what really came to my mind is that for so many years now, you know, if you've been a gamer, you've always transported yourself to that virtual world. And I think with graphic processing capabilities, with, the configuration of the machines that we work with, those worlds have been getting richer. They've been getting more detail-oriented. They've been getting richer in every sense, I would say.
Right. Yeah.
So I think even in the case of VR technology, a lot of developments have happened, right? I mean, which really make it a lot more accessible. But do you think that it's already at a stage where it'll be accessible to a large mass of people, or we're still far away from that?
Yeah, this question is two-pointed. Like, maybe I'll take this from the perspective of the industry, right? So if you look at largely industry, meaning the large corporations, like we call it the GAFAM, Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and Microsoft. Right?
Okay.
So these people, every company is trying something on VR, VR in a very big way. Today, the massive headset that is available to use, which has evolved tremendously, is Oculus, which is a Facebook-owned company, right? Which is Meta-owned company. And Meta itself changing its name from Facebook to Meta is a big boost to the AR-VR ecosystem. In fact, their share price dropped a lot. There was a lot of speculation, expectations. But that keep all the other things aside. But as a technology, all people are looking at it. And there's a specific tool to measure technology's progress. It's called Gartner's Hype Cycle. It's a very reputed tool to refer to. They have a hype, and there's a dip, and there's a plateau of productivity. That's where industries adopt such technologies.
Sure.
And AR VR has already crossed that, already is crossing that range, right? I think AR VR is going to disrupt the screen ecosystem. Like, whatever screens we use in day-to-day life, which is a laptop or a mobile screen or a projector, TV, all these are going to get disrupted by it. But we don't know how exactly, but it's going to happen.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. So this brings me to a question, you know, what really sparked your initial interest in AR and VR? You know, how did your engineering background really shape you to reach the position that you find yourself in now?
Yeah, so it's a question that we keep asking ourselves quite frequently. What happened is we were working in the mechanical and automobile space in the corporate environments. But sometimes we get saturated with whatever we've done, right? So we thought we should achieve. So we are all the first generation gamers. I think my parents did not play games. I think we were the first generation gamers. So we were really curious. We had my own college mates are my co-founders. So we've been keeping to talk about this very casually. Then we thought, okay, I think we should, Sony, Nintendo, all these big game titles which produce, we consume a lot of games, but we don't produce a lot of games. So that's when we started thinking we should do something about it. And then maybe this led to what was the future of gaming. Then we found out VR. But today we are producing less games and we are doing more of engineering content. That's a different story. That's where the markets are, right? But still the passion or the spark came from the thought that, you know, we should be content creators. Or we should be leading that, being consumers of game. I think we should have some, we will do it in the next few years if we intend to.
Absolutely. And, you know, really clearly you were passionate about games and that, you know, got you to walk down a particular path. But what's also interesting to hear is that, you know, you saw that there was a clear business need. There was a business opportunity. There were some requirements that needed to be served. And as an organization, you were willing to pivot, to change and adopt AR and VR technologies to help clients solve the unique problems that they're looking to solve, right? When you talk to clients today and you talk to them about AR, VR, and even mixed reality, extended reality, are they really open and accepting about it? Or do you have to have a uphill task in terms of convincing? What's your experience there?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the first experience that we had. When we started our company, we had the first VR headset. Maybe in Chennai, we were the first to buy it. The moment we showed it to someone, we had only a few games entering. Right. Everybody was excited to see something like that. Everybody had that excitement. Even the 8-year-old or even the 12-year-old had that same excitement. But what happens is, post-excitement, does it convert to business or does it convert to values, propositions or problem statements? That is still an uphill task. Now, maybe we've gone a long way. Now there are people who are quite exposed. People have used it, tried it. But in the initial years of the company, it was a quite daunting task for us to kind of get the entry for the first few projects. A lot of people were worried that, you know, what will happen, whether there'll be adoption of this technology. They were all worried with the hardware, right? So they said, okay, this is all some new animal. Whether it will be too costly to procure it. But it was costly in the initial days. So now I think it is brought down to a very significantly. You can buy it on Amazon today. I think Big Billion is also happening. There's a lot of discounts happening. And people, it has become, adoption has helped us a lot. Hardware, you know, pricing has helped us a lot. But in spite of that, the traction, in fact, the COVID has helped us to increase the awareness about AR VR. There were a lot of use cases which were good to have, now have changed must-have use cases. Right. These are the changes. But still, we are expecting a little more democratization of the hardware market to make it massively into the B2C segment. B2B is already revving up.
Awesome. Nice to hear that. And really, for any ecosystem or market to develop, it's really important that the entry barriers start coming down. Those barriers start coming down when the price of the average hardware, which lets you have that kind of experience, also comes down. And that price comes down when there's a local ecosystem in your own home country that can contribute to the manufacturing and production of such hardware. So till the time that we are very reliant on importing these kind of products, you're of course subject to market variations there, but also to, you know, duty and tax structures. So do you think in India today, from a hardware perspective, that market is slowly beginning to develop?
Yeah, of course. We see a lot of, you know, thrust in terms of the market picking up. The only thing is competing China is going to be very difficult, not just for India, for any other country.
Sure.
Right? So they're so deep into hardware, in spite of the tech component. AR/VR hardware is quite mobile technology, 90% mobile technology, maybe 10% is a little new. We call it the positioning technique is a little new. Even that can be borrowed from some other domain, right? So indigenizing hardware is not a problem. But the cost component, the capacity, I think we have to wait a little more. In fact, I'll tell you one more thing. We are giving a lot of insights, market insights, to multinational corporations like Meta, right? So they want to learn from us on what do we feel, how is the market picking up, right? So we can as well do that with Indian companies, right? So there are a couple of manufacturers, but to come into the global stage, compete on the price and the cost and the scale is going to be taking a little longer.
Right.
I think some subsidies are coming up. I think we have to wait and watch how does it really change.
Right. You know, I get your point. You know, it's also that matter of producing in large enough volumes so that your per unit cost comes down, and you need that economies of scale to really drive prices down. So that's a valid point you made there, Satya. Thanks for that. Okay. I wanted to ask you, Satya, about the educational background. You know, so let's say I am a student who wants to, you know, pursue a career in mixed reality, in AR and VR. What educational background is, you know, most ideally suited to help me get there?
Yeah. So I'll first break a myth, right? So we ourselves, mechanical engineers. So we are doing business in AR and VR. But of course, people can think that business is different. But if you see, the domain knowledge is very important for any new technology like this, right? So if someone, for example, if someone from civil industry or a construction industry wants to pursue AR/VR, they can always, by learning the basics of AR/VR, they can always, you know, be the subject matter experts who can implement this technology in their domain.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of scope for that. I think today, most of the students, not just for the AR/VR, even the AI thing that is coming up, we need cross-disciplinary work, the interdisciplinary work, right? So we are putting ourselves into silos too much, right? So the problem is there are simple things that, you know, some people are blindfolded or some people are unaware of. So that stops the whole progress of a new thought process or a project, right? So if people can, I think if I can put it in by, you know, some words, you have to be a jack of all domains, and you have to be master of one. I think if you want to pursue AR/VR, I think you can be a master of AR/VR, but still you have to come from a jack of all, especially non-computer science domains will have a lot of value. People from the non-computer science domain, you know, non-core, see, development is of AR/VR is computer science. Of course, it's programming. Some multimedia is required. Right. So even if you are coming from the computer science background, you need to have a sense of creative technologies like Adobe, Blender, and some animation suits is required. Even that interskilling is required. Right. Apart from that, if you come from a domain, maybe like civil engineering, maybe like a healthcare or some other domain, you can very much add value to this career. I think there are not many people in this domain, and the domain will see, technology will come very fast. Hardware will come down. All the biggies are working. And there's a lot of opportunities. Companies want solutions. We see real solutions. We see real cost savings, right? But the only roadblock that we see is going to be the talent supply. I think if the young generation can understand this, I think everybody is going to be happy.
Right. So that's a very strong message you're sending there, you know, in the sense that the industry has a good future. Application of this technology is definitely going to increase. It's going to be cross-industry. And very clearly, the people need qualified manpower, qualified personnel. And in that sense, people should really open themselves up to adopting these technologies, learning about them, and multi-skilling. So a jack-of-all master of one specific domain can really help you do that. Satya, may I ask you, let's say I'm a full-fledged AR, VR, MR studio, okay? Could you explain to us what are some of the different job roles and functions that might exist in that work environment? Because obviously you can't approach AR, VR saying, I'm going to do AR, VR. You may fit into one of these roles, you know, or job roles or job functions. So could you just walk us through that?
Yeah. So I'll just give a, layman understanding, not use much of jargon. So what happens is any AR, VR project is kind of a software development project. Okay, in the conceptual stage, right? Software development, which has a media outlook. So which means we have to use both the processes of software requirements as well as the media requirements, right? So what we do is initially we go and understand the client, what is his need. Then we kind of arrive at what are the softwares that are required to work on. So which means you may need some competency in coding. So, and then the very first step that we start is called something called as the storyboarding step, right? Yeah. In the media, we use a lot of storyboarding, right? Before you conceptualize a movie, we use a lot. So even taking an ad uses a lot of storyboard. The only difference in our storyboard is going to be it's a spatial storyboard. It's not a 2D storyboard. It's going to be a spatial storyboard. From there, we kind of put into the solutioning part. After storyboarding, requirements gathering, storyboarding, solutioning. What is solutioning? Fitment of this all these components into hardware and software. We will walk you through till from where the start. Essentially, solutioning process will lead us to a clear user journey map.
Okay.
Right. So where the user will start, what will happen to them, and what will they go through, what will they see, what will they feel. All these are captured in a technical way. And then we get into the something called as a white box process, right? So what happens is it's just a mock-up of the, before we build the real thing, we do a mock-up, right? It fairly puts the critical boxes into place, sequencing, arrangement, right? So that broad flow is fixed and shown to the customer. Sure. And inputs are validated. And then we sit and code. Within coding, there are again two components. What happens is there's a creative part where you have to build the 3D objects, 3D models, everything. That 3D pipeline is separate and the logical pipeline is separate. Okay. And then all of this is integrated into something called as a game engine, right? So game engines are the things that we take the outputs from. And while we take the outputs, there are some decision points which are like which platform you want to demonstrate it with. You want multi-platform. So all these are a part of that. So then you take the output, just like the software output, you give output and then you deploy it at the client space. Maybe some testing, QA improvements. All these are traditional processes that happen. So which means there are three distinct parts. One is the solutioning part, which is the domain. That's where the domain experts will interact. So storyboarding and the solutioning part will have a lot of salespeople and the domain experts interacting. And then the creative part, creative media pipeline, will have media people. So the traditional media skills are quite useful here. 60-70% we reuse them. But there are some special skills that are required in this field that they have to build up. Blender, Maya, 3ds Max, there are some new softwares that are coming up. The only thing that is very different in this is, in the normal media, what happens is all the content that is, even if you produce an animation movie, the content is rendered, which means it's converted into a video. Rendering process is nothing but the whole 3D thing is flattened and given to you as a video output.
Correct.
For us, it's live rendering. We don't convert it into video, which means only if I give you live, you'll be able to move inside that environment. So which means pre-rendering, the size of the file will be in TBs, in terabytes or gigabytes. So there, if you convert that gigabyte file or a terabyte file into a video, it still comes into 200 MB.
Wow.
Right? So here, it doesn't happen like that. We have to live with that 1 TB, 2 TB, and sometimes it will not even open up. So optimizing that without compromising and that quality is going to be the toughest task. So
even transferring that data, even, you know, if someone says to you, hey, Satya, just send that file across, that itself can be quite a challenge. Yeah. You have to physically go with your device and saying, let me show you, or... Right?
So that's one thing. And one more thing, we keep getting this request, no, people send a lot of reference videos and they say, can you not convert that video into VR?
Okay.
So it's not that easy.
Sure.
Look, it may look, but the other output may be looking very similar, but it's not that easy because it's live rendering. The video is just the frames put together. You put 24 frames put together, you run it, it's called a video. Right here, within video, you can't move in the video. Within the frame, you find a road, you can't move in that road.
Right.
But in VR, what you can do is you can always move into that route. So that is a... And one more thing that I missed is designing of an interaction map is what we call.
Okay.
So interaction map is nothing but an user is allowed to interact in VR, which means he's allowed to interact in the virtual environment.
Absolutely.
So which means as a creator, you should know how to design an interaction map. It's like having an architect for your digital world. Today, we don't have an architect for a digital world, right? We have architects to design our physical spaces. If some architects, so which means a lot of architects people, like studying students studying architecture, if they can specialize themselves into this digital, you know, architect, right? How do interaction design is one area. If they can specialize, the same skills or the competencies can be useful here.
Right. And thinking about the metaverse and virtual reality kind of environments, you can actually expect that the need for these kind of architects, you know, to actually increase because you will have very rich, detailed environments. You may want to think about things which look very natural and what we experience in our organic life. You want to kind of replicate that in the virtual world and do it really well. In fact, I was, you know, it was just a few weeks ago, I was in a discussion with some art and design professionals, and they were talking about how architects are going to have, you know, be employed more and more in these kind of virtual environments, because that's where the expertise will really come handy.
Yeah. So, yeah, we are also expecting such, you know, disruption. So we may have people from the, you know, even the teaching needs to change at universities and colleges adapting to this. So I'll tell you one example. There was one guy, I forget his name. He put one YouTube video on interaction design, which I was talking about.
Okay.
And how to frame. It was his master's project. And believe me, it was so detrimental. And that research paper, it was just a YouTube video. It was picked up by Google for leading that division. No interviews, nothing. Only that video, because it had, so he has done a solid research on that interaction design framework, how to on a VR device, because today we have a lot of frameworks to design for a flat screen. We don't have a framework for designing on a VR world. It's quite a wide space, right? So I think he gave some initial thought process. I think that's the demand today. Even today, we don't have that much of material to refer to. It's all trial and error.
That's amazing to hear. That's amazing to hear. All right. Now, I want to also ask you, if there's a student interested in pursuing a career in, say, mixed reality, and that student has a background in electronics, computer science, what can they do to actually build their strength, to build their portfolio while they're studying or even after graduating so that they can become more employable in this industry?
Yeah, today the resources are enormous, right? So it's so much accessible. I think students should look for a lot of online resources, start practicing. Right. Learning is by doing. So I think the only challenge would be the headset might be a little costly for them to buy. But today, even that is broken by a lot of institutions. They have a lot of infrastructure. So I think students should attempt to create their portfolio by creating small projects. Right. We see a lot of students, candidates having no resources, but by online resources, they're able to self-learn and build something. You don't have to build anything perfect, but the attempt and that progress is very important.
Right.
Why? So that will help you to land into opportunities where you can really get the learning.
That's amazing. I think that innate curiosity to keep learning keep experimenting, accessing online resources, and trying. It's okay to try and fail, but at least try. So that it's an important skill set and mindset to develop, because as an employer, when you see that, you think to yourself, hey, if this person did this kind of project or this kind of output with limited resources, if I hire him or her and I give him the right tools, I give him the right processes, this person can actually shine.
Yeah, very much. We've seen that quite a few times. One of my first few employees, he was a civil engineer. Okay. He never knew anything about computer science. He grew up to become a leading my technical team. And now he's doing his master's in Australia on AI. Okay. With a civil engineering background. Nobody, even for us, it's hard to believe. But that's what it is. Curiosity can push you really far.
That's true. That's true. I just want to say, Satya, I've really enjoyed this discussion. You know, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I think we covered some important ground, and I think students who tune into this will really be more prepared to understand what they can do to succeed in AR, VR, and MR. So thank you so much for making time and joining us.
Thank you, Amit. So I wish all the students who are pursuing this career, don't feel anything that this field, whether this will come up or not. I'm so confident. I've seen it. So all the very best. Be confident, and all the very best for your future.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Satya. This episode was packed with practical insights, and I really enjoyed my discussion with Satya. I'm hoping you did too. If you like this kind of content, subscribe to our channel on YouTube to keep getting notifications as and when new content goes live. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts as well. Our handle is the Zista Podcast. Till we meet again, we'd say, stay curious.